Welcome to Front and Center, brought to you by Frontier Communications. I'm Dan Lovallo, and joining us is the co-founder of Help Grow CT, and I invite you to visit one of their websites, helpgrowct.com, and that's Chris Sacinelli. And Chris, welcome to Front and Center.
Thank you, Dan. I'm very, very happy to be here. This is exciting. This is actually my first radio interview.
It won't be your last.
I hope not.
Tell us, just give us an overview. First of all, Chris, what is Help Grow CT?
Yeah, so Help Grow CT, we're really focused on making it cheaper and easier for small business owners to grow in the state of Connecticut. We've spent the past several years, really since 2013, taking the time to speak with small business owners across the state, survey their needs, identify the problems that they're really coming across, and hopefully solving them through solutions that are powered by technology.
Now, what inspired this movement? When you say we, first of all, who's we?
Absolutely. We have a really awesome team at Help Grow CT. We're comprised of technologists as well as small business consultants who have upwards of 25 years experience in the field. What we specifically do and what we focus on is, again, being able to create and facilitate the connectivity of resources that a small business owner may need to grow their business, whether it's from a technology standpoint down to the strategic advice and consultancy of that business, to be able to bring them to the next level. You had mentioned, you know, where we started, and that's pretty unique, and it's fairly happenstance. We didn't necessarily sit back and say, hey, let's build an economic development organization and redevelop economic development. Really, we were back in 2012 sitting in Norwalk, Connecticut. We were running a startup accelerator program out of 25 Van Zandt Street. We had six startups that were currently working on a number of different problems. Pretty much all of them were focused on the B2B space or business-to-business space. One of which specifically focused on small business owners. So it was working with that startup that we really began to pay attention and understand, in speaking with business owners across Connecticut, that there was a problem. You know, the feedback that we were getting was, we need help. So it was at that point in time that I stepped back. I kind of took aside the team that I had built a couple other startups with. And we said, hey, there's a problem here. Could we potentially solve this? And that's really where everything kind of started from.
Because I thought I read that you and some of the other people involved in this venture, they were a bit annoyed at the negative publicity that Connecticut business was receiving. Is that correct?
Yeah, it really felt like for a period of time that you couldn't pick up a newspaper or open a Feedly, an RSS feed, and see something positive about the Connecticut business climate. And we thought that that shouldn't be the case. You know, we're positioned perfectly. We are right between Boston and New York City. We have phenomenal communities. The lifestyle aspect of being able to live and grow and prosper in Connecticut is prime. So when you look at all the fundamentals or the factors of production to be able to drive a really strong environment, business environment, it's all there. You know, we have access to capital, which is extremely important. Talent is there. We have phenomenal school systems. So it really begged the question of what was wrong. And that's what we wanted to figure out. So we took some time. We did speak with over 5,000 small business owners. We ran surveys, and we even took the time to go on what we call today our journey of economic discovery. We went around the country for about 8 months.
Around the country?
Around the country. So we saw that there was a problem, and we wanted to really be able to figure that out. So we took the time to really to do our due diligence and solve it. We went around and we visited accelerator programs and co-working spaces all over the country, figuring out what they were doing to be able to drive and incentivize growth, what was working, what wasn't working. We took that feedback and we came back to Connecticut and we put foot to ground in developing Hope Grow CT.
What is working in other areas of the country?
So really what has been working systematically across the board is creating and fostering connectivity. So when you look at Connecticut today from an economic development landscape, there's a lot of awesome organizations that are providing services to small business owners and startups all across the state. And they're doing a great job at it. What's potentially the problem and what we saw and observed as being something that, that worked in other areas of the country, was that in Connecticut, it's fragmented. It's a very siloed landscape. There's awesome organizations doing really awesome things in very specific areas, or towns, neighborhoods, communities, without really a level of connectivity across the board.
Now, when you're talking about organizations, local organizations or state organizations?
Both, really. There's a ton of state organizations that are doing really awesome things. And then there's also a lot of community-based organizations, from co-working spaces in your backyard to large economic development organizations on a statewide basis.
But they need to be better unified, is that what you're saying?
I believe that we take the approach that by driving connectivity, you can increase efficiencies and you can ultimately increase effectiveness. And that's the approach that we take with Help Grow CT as a whole. What we're looking to do is leverage technology to be able to create that connectivity with small business owners. And one of the ways in which we figured out how to do that and the approach that we're looking to take is through exploring the use and application of machine learning and artificial intelligence. As a team for the past year and a half, we've been exploring and working with major technology partners to be able to leverage the concept of machine learning to drive a level of connectivity that can exist at scale. What we're trying to do is solve a problem of decreasing cost. Right, one of the fundamental issues when it comes to economic development is expensive, right? It's extremely expensive to hit that small business marketplace, and when you look at it from a broader sense and a broader scope, there's really a channel distribution issue that exists within the small business sector, which leaves that small business community underserved. Right? It's underserved from a competitive market standpoint because it's too expensive for a corporation or a new startup venture that's developing innovative products and services to grow, to help grow and enhance your business. It's too expensive for them to acquire a new customer when you're looking at that small business sector. And the lifetime value of that small business customer is low. So the incentives, the natural market, competitive market forces aren't really there to really drive and allow a free market to solve that problem, leaving that gap. And ultimately, it's the government and not-for-profits that kind of have to. They have to step in and fill that gap.
What needs to be done, Chris, in order to incentivize small business, and how does Help Grow CT become involved in this?
Absolutely. So what we're looking to do is really break down any and all barriers for a small business owner to not approach help. Getting help with their business. Traditionally speaking, the number one business killer we found is lack of action, right? It's not necessarily, when we come down to lack of action, what we can break that down to is really three primary things.
Can you, just as a backtrack, can you give us an example of a business that you have consulted without naming the business, but maybe what they do and how their lack of action is hurting, but how Help Grow CT can step in and help them out?
Absolutely. I could definitely do that. In order to do so, let's look at those three things that kind of create and foster that lack of action. Really, the first issue when you talk to a small business owner is cost or expense, right? So when you go out and you have a conversation, the average business owner is going to go to a program like SCORE or some other free program to be able to get advisory services or consultancy in terms of strategic advice on what they should do in their company, as opposed to going out and paying a consultant $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. And then that creates a barrier to be able to get the advice. And then if you do have the advice, just the cost basis of making a decision, pulling the trigger of saying, hey, let me use or onboard this new platform or this new software to enhance the productivity or efficiency of my business, that becomes a little bit out there. So what we look to do as an organization is to leverage the size and scale of the small business owners who participate with Help Grow CT. And we go out and we negotiate awesome, really deals right? Discounts. For premium platforms, we make it cheaper, more affordable for a small business owner to adopt that platform. And we really decrease the cost because we're able to work with so many businesses and we build and leverage technology to provide our services at scale to create the accessibility necessary to work with every small business in Connecticut. Really, our goal, there's about 300,000 small businesses in Connecticut today. Our immediate goal is to work with 1% of them, which is 3,000 businesses.
That's a lot of businesses.
You know, and to be able to do that, you really have to sit back and focus on building a technology stack that can accommodate that type of volume. The traditional consultancy model is go out, find 10 business owners that can pay you a $10,000 a month retainer to make your $120,000. And then what that ultimately does is leaves the market that we're building our products and services around, that small business owner, underserved. And that's where we're trying to kind of step in and fill that void.
Define leverage technology and the technology stack.
Absolutely. So at our core, we're technologists. We believe that technology should complement the human component, the human function. We should be able to do things more efficient and more effective through the application and development of technology. So we look at technology on two standpoints. One, on an internal basis, how we can build technology internally within our organization to be able to create efficiencies that allow us to service thousands of small business owners at scale. The second way in which we look at technology and the second way in which we apply technology is in the actual service that we deliver to small business owners. Most small business owners, so we already kind of touched on cost. Cost is a prohibiting factor in adopting new technology in your business. Other factors are time and know-how. You know, a lot of the time, you don't know what you're doing, you don't know what you should be doing, and you don't have the time to figure it out.
Right.
So what we try to do is actually step in and find enterprise-level technology platforms that already exist, partner with them, and then create an infrastructure, a productized infrastructure, in which we can bring small business owners into that onto that platform to drive efficiencies in their own business at an affordable cost basis.
Talking with Chris Sacinelli, he is co-founder of Help Grow CT. Okay, I own a sandwich shop.
Mm-hmm.
I'm harried. I'm going in a million and one directions. And, you know, maybe I'm making ends meet, but I feel as if I'm spinning my wheels. I call Help Grow CT. How do you help me?
Absolutely. So, realistically, the first thing that's going to happen is you're going to get connected with an accredited business advisor, what we call a growth partner. These are individuals who have experience upwards of 25 years consulting small businesses already. They've built their consultancy practices, they've gone through the market, and they understand the fact that what we're building and the market need of being able to provide services at scale at an affordable rate truly exists. So they've joined our team. For $135 a month, which is the cost basis.
Not $10,000 a month for a consultant.
Not $10,000.
$130 a month.
$135 a month. You get paired up with a accredited business advisor who has an experience and background. And they begin to work on a structuralized process with you to assess your current business, where you stand, your needs. And then they create proposals, structuralized proposals, to present to you on ways that in which we could improve your company in terms of efficiency and effectiveness to drive your profit and grow your profit.
By way of technology?
By way...
Social media?
Correct. Now, the social media component is really the winning aspect of our program because for that $135 a month fee... That's really based around the advisory services, we're actually taking over your social brands and we're managing for you. So the reason and why which we approached it that way, most small business owners today, they know how it, kind of managing your social presence is kind of, it's a matter of fact type of thing. You have to do it. You know, in doing it, there's a cost. And that cost is either your time in which you're spending managing your profiles or the money in which you're outsourcing. fact of the matter is most of the providers who do that social media management do it around that $135 range or more or greater. So what we've done is we focused in on a real tangible deliverable, something that we know small business owners need anyway, and they're already spending either the time or the money on. We take that over, and then that creates the opportunity. It breaks down that barrier for us to have the opportunity to build a relationship with you and focus on the other components of your business where we could potentially explore ways in which you can grow.
But now, there is a way to make social media productive, work for the business, right? I mean, a lot of these business owners don't have the time, so they maybe just throw something up on social media. But again, this is where Help Grow CT steps in. There's a way to manage this, right?
Absolutely. Everything that we do, we productize. So at the end of the day, everything comes down to a process. Through creating the process, we're able to create consistencies. And in the consistencies, control the quality. It's like going to Subway, for example, and you can have, you know, any sandwich that you want really made in front of you, but it's all productized. And at the end of the day, the individual making the sandwich knows exactly how much salami to put on that wedge. We take the same type of approach with everything that we do. So we productize your social media. We break out strategies in which you could approach. We know how to execute on them. And then we do the same thing for all the systemizations of all other components of your business, from operations to financials to marketing, to then that final growth stage. And that's how we break it down. We take it from a very process-driven approach.
Now, you've met with how many businesses already?
So we've surveyed over the, since 2013, we've surveyed over 5,000 businesses.
What was in the survey?
In surveying these businesses, really what it started, the core of it again started, because we were being told that it was difficult to grow your business in Connecticut. So we wanted to understand why.
Yeah.
And what we ultimately found out was, again, it was access. It's access to resources. And not just access to, resources in the form of advice or opinions, but access to resources in the form of tangibilities that can be applied on a ready basis to your company, to your business.
See, I find this interesting because you've got the state out there. For example, you've got the Department of Economic and Community Development, which claims that it has resources and, you know, all the businesses have to do is tap into these resources. Is the state just not getting the word out, or don't they have enough to handle the volume of businesses we have here in Connecticut?
So realistically, we take an entirely different approach than the state is able to.
Good.
You know, that's where we fill the void. You know, again, when you take it back to this market standpoint, this economic standpoint, the small business owner needs the help because they're underserved, and they're underserved because for most for-profit companies, it's not beneficial to really service that marketplace. The cost, the reward doesn't outweigh the cost. So that's when you have governments kind of stepping in. When a government steps in, they're not allowed to take a for-profit approach. You know, they can't be referring you to very specific platforms and setting you up with very specific solutions. They have to kind of take the approach of a generalist. They have to give you advice. With Help Grow CT, we're looking at solutions, and we're tangibly setting you up with solutions because we have the freedom to do so as a for-profit company.
But at an affordable cost for these small businesses.
That's the challenge. You know, at the end of the day, we need to be able to do it at an affordable cost, because if we don't, the average small business owner will not take advantage of the opportunity. And that's the problem that exists today. It's too expensive for most small business owners to even try. Which generates that lack of action, which is that number one business killer.
So how are these small businesses surviving if they're not taking some of the steps required, such as, in this day and age, having a presence on social media?
Absolutely. I think the real concept is the differentiation between surviving and thriving, right? Because the fact of the matter is we are, you know, business owners are operating. They are operating at a profit. We have a viable number of new businesses starting on a daily basis and on a yearly basis. The system, in a sense, is functioning. You know, what we're trying to do is improve it. We're trying to take us from zero and bring us to one, in a sense.
And take it to the next level, which is the popular phrase these days, right?
Exactly. And that's really what we see our ability to do through leveraging technology, specifically on the artificial intelligence side and on the machine learning and on the cognitive development standpoint. We believe that through the use of that technology, we can decrease costs down to the point of zero. So we can create zero barriers of entry for a small business owner to participate in any of these growth programs or services at a later date. So what we're trying to do and what we're really doing in terms of innovation at Help Grow CT is working with machine learning and artificial intelligence to build infrastructures that can be deployed on a massive, massive basis. We're trying to take the traditional advisory services that are being provided by an individual, and because it's being provided by a person, a real person, there's a cost associated with that, and ultimately that cost has to be passed on to the business owner. We're trying to take that experience and program and leverage program artificial intelligence to be able to provide that experience at no cost.
Now, does Help Grow CT design a model, a one-size-fits-all for these businesses, or is it tailor-made to specific businesses?
We build the entire thing to scale. Because we can build it to scale, we can make it cost-effective. We can drive efficiencies, effectiveness in our own business that we can then pass on to your business. But we can also tailor. Just like if you were to go to McDonald's and you went through the drive-thru, you order a double cheeseburger, you can ask it plain. Don't put onions on that. You can do the same thing with us. So you're going through a process, and that process is a proven process to be able to have and affect the change in your company designed towards improving efficiencies and effectiveness by leveraging technology. But because you're actually working with a accredited business advisor, a growth partner, you have a conversation and you build a relationship, and we're able to have that kind of tailored effect and make decisions in a real-time basis around your needs and your situation.
How many businesses do you have on board?
You know, to be perfectly honest, we're a little bit embarrassed about that number. Okay. You know, we've been around since 2013. The reality is when we first started back then, we weren't building a product and we weren't trying to sell something. You know, as a founder, as a startup founder, I believe in building a revenue-first business, meaning that you should have a product-market fit. You should know who your customer is. You should know what they need. You should build a product that services that need, and then you should be able to sell it. When we first started this business, we didn't have a product because we didn't know what the need was. We just knew there was a problem.
Today, we are joined in studio by Chris Sacinelli, co-founder of Help Grow CT. And they have a couple of websites, actually, helpgrowct.com and also helpgrowct.org. What's the difference between the two, Chris?
Absolutely. Great question. So helpgrowct.com is the site that you should go to if you're interested in the services we're providing. If you're a small business owner out there and you're looking for help, please visit helpgrowct.com. Contact us there. Helpgrowct.org was the site that we launched to be able to run our market research. Again, because it's such a large problem, and we're really trying to figure out the best possible solution or solutions to it, it's required a lot of feedback from a lot of different types of individuals, whether it's a small business owner, a startup, a resident, or an investor. We've used helpgrowct.org to be able to run all of our market research surveys. So if you also have an opinion or a thought or an idea on how we could improve economic or redevelop economic development in Connecticut, please visit helpgrowct.org and share that with us there.
Now, let's take a look at this from a couple of angles. First of all, in this day and age, what does it take to begin a startup?
Absolutely. So my entire career has been in the startup space. I've been involved with early stage companies for as long as I can remember. I know a lot of people, you know, stereotypically today say that, but I truly mean it when I say it. I've been involved with it since I was 9 years old. When I was in college, I was lucky enough to launch my first startup, and I didn't even know what it was at the time. You know, I didn't know that there was a difference between a business or a small business and a startup. You know, what is the difference, really? At the end of the day, the difference is growth, the growth factor. A startup is something that's being built for high impact. It can scale extremely fast, and it can service a lot of people. It services a big market demand. A small business is something that's built and is fundamentally servicing a specific market, and it's done based off of, specific processes and fundamentals to be able to deliver that service or that need. In terms of the startup space, it's an entirely different market that HelpGrow CT has yet to truly, truly tap into. We do run an accelerator program, a startup accelerator program, out of our offices in Bridgeport. We work out of the Firehouse 135, which is firehouse135.com. It's a startup accelerator as well as a co-working space. When we work with a startup, we're trying to identify a business that has a big idea, may not necessarily have a strategy to approach it or factors of production to be able to hit it off the ground. And we try to dissect it and understand if there truly is a product market fit, if there is, what's the quickest way they can test it out. And once it's tested and validated, how you can kind of iterate or build into change to be able to scale it. Startup's all about scale.
That's important to hear. Now, somebody wants to begin a startup. And, someone comes to you just for personal advice, even not even through HelpGrowCT.com. Chris, mm-hmm. I want to begin a startup. What would your response be?
My first response is why? why do you want to build a begin a startup? Because
I want to work for myself. I'm sick of working for other people.
And that is a typical type of response. What most people don't understand is it's a million times harder to work for yourself than it is to work for anybody else. The commitment of time, energy, effort, the sacrifice that you have to make in your life, financially, on a personal basis, between friendships and loved ones, it's great. It is definitely great. So your reason to be able to pursue that startup or your vision for that startup has to be greater. So that would be the first thing that I challenge. After challenging that, if the individual's right on a personal basis, if they're passionate enough to be able to pursue that idea and bring it into fruition, the next issue is, will the market accept it? Is there truly a need for that service? That comes into the market validation. Market validation, great way of doing that is through straightforward market research, very similar to what we did with HelpGrow CT. I mean, we spent several years, just talking to small business owners, traveling around the country, trying to understand the problem and try to generate a solution that's a scalable solution. At the end of the day, I look at HelpGrow CT, and really I see something like HelpGrow USA. I see a startup. I see something that we can, through the leverage of technology and implementation of technology, drive and impact at a scaled out basis, drive economic growth at scale. Nationwide, hopefully global.
And again, for the small businesses, what you're talking about here, because there are businesses obviously in existence, is taking them to the next level, enabling them to thrive. Would that be correct?
Absolutely. To me, thriving is it's the same way as if you were to work with a team member, and it's you have a conversation of maximization of potential. When you bring somebody into your company, you're really trying to understand what puts them in the best possible life situation, where their work complements their reality or what they would like their reality to be. We take the same type of approach with a small business owner. It's a lot of the times you speak to a small business owner and the feedback is, I'm wearing many hats. I have too much going on. Again, let's come back to those three reasons, those three business killers: capital, time, and know-how, right? We don't have the time, right? Because we don't have the time, we can't figure it out. Because we can't figure it out, we still don't have the time, and our business isn't really growing, so we don't have that extra capital to be able to go and buy the solutions, So it's this cyclical problem. What we try to do is take a very process-driven approach to take you out of that cycle. And we want to put you into a new growth cycle within your small business. And ideally, that growth cycle will make you more profitable. So you'll have more capital to reinvest. Well, ideally making it more efficient for you. So we're going to save you time, give you more time to be able to spend it in the way in which you would like, whether it's figuring out reinvestments or learning more to be able to drive a better business, or if it's reallocating it to your family or loved ones or lifestyle.
Does it matter the business? Because, you know, you've got a marketplace that's constantly changing.
Absolutely. You know, so the two points that I'd like to touch on. One is, focus. Focus is extremely important, especially when you're driving processes. Having consistency across the board is extremely important to drive quality. So the type of business that we're looking at is important, and it is specific. But it's not pigeonholed into a specific niche or industry. We're looking at small business owners, and a small business owner, typically is somebody with $10 million or less in revenue, but realistically we're looking at that business owner that has $1 million and less in revenue. The individual who truly is experiencing those three issues. They feel as though they don't have enough money to just go and spend it on their business and reinvest in trying out new types of strategies and technology and improvements in their company because they can't just throw away money. You know, they don't have the time because they feel like they're constantly working. You know, they're constantly putting out fires, and they don't necessarily have the know-how because it is an ever-changing environment. You know, like you mentioned, everything's constantly changing and we're ever-growing. That's the kind of the role that we'd like to play. We're innovative first, so we are paying attention to what's going on. And as we see changes, we build into those changes and we adapt it into our processes so that you don't have to be concerned with that. We kind of take you through that growth life cycle.
Talking to Chris Saccinelli, helpgrowct.com. All this is very fascinating. Now, you, meaning Help Grow CT, attended the Connecticut Business Expo. What was that experience like?
Absolutely. That was extremely exciting for us. It was our first expo. It was the first time that we actually had the opportunity of printing out our banner and seeing our logo kind of hanging up there and having a booth. So it was great. They were awesome partners. They actually gave us the booth, which we're extremely appreciative of. And in terms of opportunity, it gave us the opportunity to further validate the need that there is in this marketplace for our service. We were able to speak with, I believe we recruited 180 or so small business owners, to become interested in getting involved with Help Grow CT at the Business Expo. So it was very successful as well. Fact of the matter is when you are presenting a solution that's making it cheaper and easier for you to grow your business, people want to listen. What's difficult on it is actually producing and delivering. And to that accord, that's why for the past, really since the expo, we've been really focusing in. We've been redeveloping our technology. We have made a handful of mistakes since launching Help Grow CT. We acknowledge that. We're aware of that. It's a part of the growth process, and in acknowledging that, we iterate, we change. We build into that change so that we can continue to grow ourselves. So we've made massive reinvestments based off of understanding that demand off the Business Expo to be able to service that small business community at scale. And we believe, genuinely strongly believe that we are in a position today to really blow that scale out. We need a test. And we actually need help ourselves. So we really need help to get 200 more small business owners to come in and try a free trial of our platform, of our process, of our service, so that we can stress test the system. You know, we built it to the point where we're building this in stages. Our first stage is relaunching at 200. We're going to then get to 500. We're going to redevelop our platform. We're going to build it to 1,000, to 3,000. And then ideally, we'd like to be able to take our technology and democratize it. We want to make it available. We want to make the platforms that we're building for our internal purposes, democratize it and make it available to economic development agencies across the country, as well as business consultants across the country. And that's where we really need to go. And in order to get there, we need everybody's help.
You mentioned, by the way, how awesome it was to see your logo up there at the expo. How important is branding?
Branding's extremely important, and that's why we try to front run our packaging and our service, that $135 a month subscription, with the underlining purpose of brand. Brand's connected to so many things about your company, whether it's the promise that you're making in the marketplace, the voice in which you have, the feelings and emotions in which you can convey. All of it's extremely important, and that's also a direct correlation of who you are, as a person. A company's only as great as the people who build it, right? And ultimately, that brand, I feel, is a representation of the team. Because building a company and doing awesome things and driving impact, creating innovation, and providing a service that matters, it's all done by the individuals involved, that team. So really, when I look at a brand, that's what I see. I see the people behind.
Yeah, well, and, you know, that's one of the, you know, more now more than ever with the social media that we have out there, with websites, all of that, branding is key.
It's extremely key, and at the end of the day, most business owners, they feel these things, they know these things, in their heart of hearts, they get how important it is. But again, it's expensive to do it. The time to be able to put down and figure out the thoughts, you know, we put together brand reports that just when you're initially coming into our subscription, into the service offering as a client, we're putting together a brand report that's 25 to 50 pages long, you know. That's a lot of work, and most business owners don't really feel as though they have the time to sit down and put pen to paper to create a structure that off of that structure you can then deliver upon on a consistent basis, day after day, month after month, year after year, and build upon.
Talking with Chris Saccinelli, he is co-founder of Help Grow CT. Visit helpgrowct.com, also helpgrowct.org. Your first business was when you were 9 years old, did you say?
Yes. So I've always been, I fantasized about capitalism. I'm a capitalist at the end of the day. So if you were to ask a friend of mine to describe me, they'd probably describe me as a technologist, you know, because that's what I focus on any given day. If I was to kind of describe myself, I'd probably say I'm a capitalist. If I was to really communicate who I am as a person, I would say I'm a social capitalist. I believe that capital markets work. I believe that you should incentivize productivity, but I believe that you can pursue goals that really matter. And when I say something that matters, I mean something that can have an impact on the world, that can really change and improve lives. And that's what that concept of social capitalism comes into play. And that's what we are with Help Grow CT. We're a benefit company. The concept of being a social capitalist, having a for-profit process in place, infrastructure in place, but impact as the motive. Being a capitalist and always fantasizing about capital, as soon as I learned what a stock was and the fact that you could own a piece of a company, I was in fifth grade at the time. They talked about it in my class that day. I was like, you can own Disney? What? So I went, I had some dollar bills that I had squirreled away in my closet, all bundled up. I took them, I walked a couple of blocks down to a financial advisory company. It was Edward Jones. And I put the money on the table and I said, I want to buy stock. I want to own a company.
You're 9 years old.
I was 9 years old. And they looked at me, they kind of got up on the desk and looked down, and okay, you got to come back with a parent or guardian and a checkbook, because they couldn't take cash. So I did. I came back. I came back with my father. We sat down at the desk. They built out this plan. It was just a simple mutual fund plan at the time, but it was so awesome to me that I saw the fact that if you visualize something, meaning this goal of being financially secure at a certain age, and you stick to that plan, you keep contributing towards it, and you build towards it, you can end up with it. And just that idea, I loved it. But then the hard part came. I had to deliver. I had to every 2 weeks deliver $50 into that account. So in order to do so, I went out and I knocked on all the doors in my neighborhood and I asked everybody, hey, I'm trying to do this. Can I get a job? And eventually one person said yes. He was a serial entrepreneur himself. He ran a insurance company. He gave me the opportunity to throw away the garbage and file papers, and I took it.
Nine years old.
I was just exiting the fifth grade at the time, so okay. I was entering into middle school.
All right.
And I started working, and realistically, I found myself just excited about the concept of business. I tried to understand what was going on in the office and why everybody was working so hard and why they were doing what they were doing. And eventually, I started to come in with ideas, entrepreneurial ideas. Ideas for businesses, and I would pitch it to him. And eventually, he agreed to invest. So when I was in middle school, I ended up starting my first business, really.
Did it have a name?
No. Actually, and the initial one was really just going to Costco, buying candy at wholesale prices, coming back up to my locker and selling it to the kids at lunchtime for a dollar a piece. But eventually I started to get into more structuralized businesses, eventually culminating. It's a little bit embarrassing to say on the radio, but when I was in high school, I ran a personalized baby album company. So we adopted a website. We launched it onto the internet. It was a tech business, technically. We created customer acquisition funnels online, drove new mothers to come in and buy personalized baby albums that we then made in my room. I made it in my bedroom.
Was it making money for you? It was actually making money.
He ended up going on and selling that business. So it was technically the first exit that I was able to participate in. I believe I was a senior in high school at the time. Really, by the time I got into college, I was just so fascinated. I saw the opportunity to be able to, I was finally 18, to be able to trade and be an investor, which is always something that I've just been extremely passionate about. Spent about 7 hours a day researching and trading. I ended up building a syndicate of other college students, and what I did was I built a database where we kept track of newsletters that promoted stocks, and I would delegate a certain number of newsletters to a certain number of kids to follow. They'd write down the ticker symbols that that newsletter was promoting, and I would run an analysis through the database to be able to follow up that ticker in a pump, and then we would short into a dump, in a sense.
Wow.
And we ran it through an email chain, mm-hmm. And it worked really well. And I sat back and said, hey, if this is working for us, you know, MySpace was big at the time. Facebook was just coming about. I said, if this is working for us on such a small stage, why don't we scale this out? Why don't we build something where we could facilitate this conversation and this dialogue with, you know, kids all over, people interested in investing all over? And I went home and taught myself development and built the successful young investor, SYI.com, which was the first social network for young investors. Launched it when I was a sophomore in college, and it blew up. It was really it went from zero users to 10,000 users in 3 weeks, and that was my first taste of building a high impact startup. Mm-hmm. After there, it's pretty much history. I've been involved with a handful of other high impact businesses. We've gone from zero to scale successfully, and now we're looking to do it again with Help Grow CT. We think that we can truly take what we've learned through our experience. We think that we can help other entrepreneurs in Connecticut as we continually build our own startup and effectively create a change for small business owners in the process that truly matters and be disruptive.
Where'd you go to school?
So I went to school in University of Tampa. If you go and ask my guidance counselor, Mr. Sullivan, I went to school at Nauk High School. My father was the automotive teacher there. If you ask him, I would still bet you that to this day, I was his number one problem student because I applied to 18 colleges when I was a junior in high school, you know, looking for that full ride in a sense. Tampa was lucky enough to give it to me. It created a really awesome lifestyle, and realistically being down there is what created the opportunity for me to get into that startup space. I never would have said coming out of high school that I was going to be doing what I ended up doing.
Business major?
I was an economics and finance major. Helped found the investment club down there. I had the opportunity to write my first book, which was A Successful Young Playbook.
What was the book?
A Successful Young Playbook, which was really a lifestyle book,
a
guide.
The Successful Young Playbook is the title.
Yes. It's still available on Amazon today. You go out and purchase it. It was really a playbook for young individuals, for college, specifically college students, to kind of just go through 1 to 20 plays of how to go out and make things happen for yourself in life. And it really came off of a bet. Somebody bet me I couldn't write a book. So 20 days later, I ended up writing and publishing the book.
20 days?
Yeah, I think it was actually 21, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's in print, too. E-book and print?
Absolutely. It's in print. It's an e-book. It's really still also it's a pretty simple read, too. I actually was just... I went out to the Downtown Project this past week to talk to accelerator programs out of there, and I read it on the plane ride over, so I just want to make sure it's still relevant.
Is it?
It is. I would definitely say it was. What I originally intended for it to be was when I graduated from college, I came back to Connecticut specifically around the goal of creating a financial literacy and entrepreneurship course that I was going to distribute, create and distribute for free to schools. because I acknowledge the fact that I thought that the education system was broken because we didn't really promote the concept of financial literacy in education. Personally, I see financial literacy as being as the fundamentals of what reading and writing was in 1700. Right? If you had the ability to read a contract and sign your name, you had the ability to do business. Today, I believe that it's been so complicated that the ability to have and understand financial literacy is the difference between being in debt when you get out of college or being in debt at 30 years old and being able to have a lifestyle in which you choose to live, the freedom to decide. And that's what we promote in the company as well as a part of our culture. It's all about the maximization of potential. We want to be in this position where we have the freedom to decide. And ultimately, what we're deciding to do is effectively change economic growth or redevelop economic development, ideally within the United States.
Has our school system addressed that problem of financial illiteracy? Are they doing some of what you thought, or are they not? And do we need to do that?
You know, when I came back, and I actually spent a significant amount of time putting together the program, I pitched the program, and that's, again, the problem. So the same problem that we're seeing today with economic development and these really awesome organizations that are put together to try to affect economic change, the same hands-tied issue or the hands-tied problem of being a government-based or nonprofit-based organization who can only do specific things, it ties up the ability to truly affect change and institute change on an efficient and effective basis. So the concept of saying no is way more frequent than the concept of saying yes. So we weren't able to get the programs live. You know, the bureaucracy of the situation kind of killed it.
I mean, that's unbelievable, and you're absolutely right. I so agree with you that we need to be teaching in schools, grammar school, middle school, high school, financial literacy. Now more than ever, because the old model of where you went to work and the company supplied you with a pension, and in some cases, you didn't even have to invest in that pension. The company did most of all of the investing. Of course, now that model has totally changed, and you, as an individual, need to plan your own retirement, Chris.
Exactly. And I think that the concepts of just the basic fundamentals, if we could put ourselves in a position to create the opportunity for individuals to just approach it, we all successfully could. That's why when we're building HelpGrow CT, we took our office space and we really just designed an idea to create an open concept for entrepreneurs to be able to come in, work out of the space for free, be able to tap into the resources and factors of production that we were able to put into place for ourselves, and use it to just pursue their own dreams, goals, passions. You know, I think it's just a matter of creating accessibility. If you can create accessibility, then individuals will take advantage of it and amazing things will happen.
Less than a minute left. Again, how can people get in touch with Help Grow CT?
What we're currently looking for, we really are looking for a critical mass of businesses. We're more than willing and open to having people just come in and try it out for free. Just put us through the ringer. We need to stress test this thing. You could either email me at chris@helpgrowct.org. Or you could visit helpgrowct.com and apply and contact us through there. We're also actively looking for business consultants and anybody who's in this industry ecosystem who wants to get involved. And we're really also looking for talent. We need engineers. We need awesome, bright engineers who are interested in learning the cognitive development space. We have extreme competitive advantages to be first to market in this space. We can offer a ton of opportunity.
Chris@helpgrowct.org.
Absolutely.
Awesome job.
I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Chris Sacinelli has been our guest.